This assessment of the stimulus program on the next Fresh Air. Join us.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3.
Broadcast of this program is made possible in part by the Alaska Budget Report, specializing in the straight scoop on state government since 1991. On the web at akbudgetreport.com.
A resurrected home in the Lower Ninth Ward is capturing the pulse of New Orleans. Artists have created a kind of village where sounds made by New Orleanians are transformed into a musical kaleidoscope.
I think this is the best music I have ever made on my own.
The New Orleans Music Box, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. My name is Jeff Brown. Today on the show, we'll find out about upcoming English as a second language classes with Heather Park from the Learning Connection. We'll reserve National Mentoring Month with guests Carlton Smith and Thomas Kramer. Keith Wertheimer will be here to highlight Saturday's fundraising auction to benefit disabled American vets. We'll get a preview of tonight's Wildlife Wednesday presentation on nature and Southeast Alaska Native art with guest Juneau Dedrickson. I'll also talk to Kevin Tripp from Amoeba about the politics of the past presentation this Monday night at the Gold Town Nickelodeon Theater. The forecast for the rest of today looks like snow showers with the newest snow accumulation 1 to 2 inches expected. Forecast for tonight, snow showers with accumulation 1 to 4 inches expected.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In the State of the Union address, President Obama laid out his agenda for energy policy and dealing with a divided Congress that could have a big impact on Indian country. Correspondent Matt Laszlo has more from Washington, D.C.
Republicans control the House, but the president says he isn't looking for their approval for items such as spurring clean energy development on public lands and increasing scrutiny of mortgage companies. Those initiatives and others could impact tens of thousands of Native Americans. But the sentiments don't sit well with Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee.
I really am not amused by such statements. We have the world's most successful constitutional republic, and it has survived well for almost 225 years because it limits on presidential power, limits on congressional power, and he's trampling on some of those limitations, and that bothers me.
While it's not all new, the president is laying out an ambitious agenda for this year. He wants to roll back tax breaks for oil companies and hike taxes on the wealthiest Americans. The president also says he wants the nation to commit to training 2 million workers to leave community colleges prepared for a specific trait. Virginia Democratic Congressman Jim Moran says the president was looking to House Republicans for support.
It really was not the beginning of any kind of campaign based upon running against the Congress. This was reaching out, asking the Congress to cooperate on his initiatives.
On Thursday, President Jefferson Keel of the National Congress of American Indians will deliver the State of Indian Nations Address. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington, D.C.
Canada's Native leaders and the Prime Minister have agreed on a roadmap for future discussions on how to improve the lives of the country's Aboriginal people after a day-long summit in Ottawa that included senior cabinet members in the federal government and hundreds of Native leaders. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the meeting began with both sides far apart on one key issue.
That key issue is the Indian Act, which was first passed in 1876. It gives the Canadian government exclusive jurisdiction over Indians and lands reserved for Indians. That law also defines who is recognized among First Nations and sets out rules on everything from how reserves operate to the effect of marriage on status. Some Native leaders want the Act scrapped. Sean Atleo is the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations. In his opening comments at the Ottawa Summit, Atleo called the Indian Act a relic of the past and an obstacle.
Built on a disgraceful premise of our inferiority, aimed at assimilation and the destruction of our cultures, it was a complete abrogation of the partnership between respectful nations. largely unchanged, it remains a painful obstacle to reestablishing any form of meaningful relationship.
For his part, Prime Minister Stephen Harper acknowledged that the Act has created problems in the past, but he also made it clear in his own opening address that there would be no scuttling of the Indian Act.
Our government has no grand scheme to repeal or to unilaterally rewrite the Indian Act. After 136 years, that tree has deep roots. Blowing up the stump would just leave a big hole.
By the end of the day, the two sides had slightly closed the gap. They agreed that while the Act cannot immediately be repealed, it can be modernized. But many chiefs were also quick to say that the Indian Act was not the major issue. They say the Harper government has imposed many laws, and if that's the relationship that they're considering resetting, then they're on the wrong track. Others say they hope for more concrete decisions than just a roadmap for more talk. Some chiefs say they'll return to their communities with nothing new to offer people living in shacks or with no fresh or running water. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
On this day in 2010, the U.S. Mint launched the 2010 Native American $1 coin with a design honoring the Iroquois Confederacy. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Just about 3:06, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest is Heather Parker from the Learning Connection, here to tell us about English as a Second Language and citizenship classes, which are coming in the near future. Heather, thank you very much for coming down the station today.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, tell us about the Learning Connection, if you could, please.
The Learning Connection is an adult education center based in Juneau but serves all of Southeast Alaska, and we provide free English as a second language, free computer classes, and free GED classes, as well as job services for youth and adults.
How does English as a second language class work? What's the process of teaching somebody English when it's not their first language?
In English as a second language classes, I always assess students when they first come in, and then I place students in different levels. But I don't speak a whole lot of different languages. I speak some Spanish, and so the class is completely in English. And we use a lot of pictures. We do a lot of pictures on the board and write and work through workbooks.
What are some of the most common phrases or words? I think of like donde el baño.
We try and do a lot of survival skills, so where is the bathroom is a good question, but we also, terms that seem to be pretty comfortable for a lot of students when we first start are terms related to food, because everyone likes talking about food from their countries, and so a lot of times we start out with like different kitchen words and different cooking words.
What cultures do people come from who come to Juneau to your classes?
Last year, we served students from 35 different countries.
Wow.
So we have a huge mix of different countries and cultures that come to our classes. Some students come from Mexico, Thailand, the Philippines, Vietnam, China, South Korea. We have a whole mix of different countries and cultures represented in our classes.
Yeah, so teach English, citizenship skills.
And we also teach citizenship. So on Tuesday and Thursdays at the Learning Connection at 210 Ferry Way, we have a citizenship class from 5 to 6:30, and it's preparing students to take the citizenship interview, to pass the interview.
We've talked about this test before. What are some sample questions?
So to become a U.S. citizen, you have to fill out an application and meet all of these requirements, and then you have to pass an interview. And you have to read and write a sentence in English, and you also have to answer questions about U.S. history and government. And an example of a question would be, who is the father of our country? And the answer is George Washington. Or, what is the supreme law of the land? That's the Constitution. But there are other questions like, how many U.S. senators are there or how many U.S. representatives are there that some people might need to study for.
Mm-hmm. These classes are free?
All of our classes are free.
And something new at the Global Breakfast on Friday.
That's right. This Friday, January 27th, from 11 to 12:30 at our Greening Park Center, which is at 1800 Northwood Drive, apartment G49, we're having a free global breakfast, and we're encouraging a lot of our English students and students from all different cultures to come share food from their culture, and we're going to have games, raffle prizes. It should be a really fun event.
And where are the where's the English as a second language classes being held?
Our English as a second language classes are held in three different locations. We have classes that are downtown at 210 Ferry Way, at Greening Park on Wednesdays and Fridays, and that's again at 1800 Northwood Drive. And then we also have classes out at the university. We have classes in Egan Room 115 on Mondays and Wednesdays from 5:30 to 7. And new this year, with the help of a grant from U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services last year, we were able to purchase the Rosetta Stone program. And so students can come and practice English even if there's not an English class going on. They can work at their own pace on practicing English language and pronunciation and reading, which is really exciting.
Cool. I've been talking with Heather Parker from the Learning Connection about English as a Second Language and citizenship classes. Anything I'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask? Maybe something more about the classes that you offer?
Well, if students have any questions or want to call, our phone number is 586-5718. And they can find information about all of our classes on our website at www.serrc.org/TLC.
You see other computer classes as well?
That's right. Our center offers all sorts of adult education classes. And for February, we're offering Introduction to Microsoft Word and Advanced Microsoft Excel. And those are in the evening, and they're sponsored by a grant from the City and Borough of Juneau. There's also someone from the Juneau Job Center comes two Thursdays a month and meets with students who are interested in learning more about job search and creating a resume and using the Alaska Labor Exchange system online.
Cool. Heather Parker, thank you so much for coming down to the station.
Thank you very much for having me. Have a good day.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 25th of January, 2012. It's the birthday of Somerset Maugham, born in Paris, 1874. His father was in Paris as a lawyer for the British Embassy. When the boy was 8, his mother died from tuberculosis. His father died of cancer 2 years later. The boy was sent back to England into the care of a cold, distant uncle, a vicar. Maugham was miserable at his school. He said later, "I wasn't even likable as a boy. I was withdrawn and unhappy." He became a doctor, and he practiced in the London slums. He was particularly moved by the women he encountered in the hospital where he delivered babies, and he was shocked by his fellow doctors' callous approach to the poor. He wrote, "I saw how men died. I saw how they bore pain. I saw what hope looked like, fear and relief. I saw the dark lines that despair drew on a face. I saw courage and steadfastness. I saw the gallantry that made a man greet the prognosis of death with an ironic joke, because he was too proud to let those about him see the terror of his soul." When he was 23, Somerset Maugham published his first novel, Liza of Lambeth, about a working-class 18-year-old named Liza who has an affair with a 40-year-old married man named Jim, a father of 9. Jim's wife beats up Liza, who's pregnant and who miscarries and dies. The novel was a big success. Maugham made enough money to quit medicine, become a full-time writer. For many years, he made his living as a playwright, but eventually he became one of the most popular novelists in Britain. Novels including Of Human Bondage, The Moon and Sixpence, Cakes and Ale, and The Razor's Edge. Somerset Maugham, who said, "To acquire the habit of reading is to construct for yourself a refuge from almost all the miseries of life. It's the birthday of the poet Robert Burns, born Alloway, Scotland, 1759, son of a poor tenant farmer, brought up to work in the fields. When he was 15, he fell in love with a farm laborer named Nellie and wrote his first poem for her, "Oh, Once I Loved a Bonnie Lass." He tried to make a living as a farmer. He wasn't very good at it. He wanted to leave Scotland, sail to Jamaica, and he published a book of poems to raise money for his fare, a book entitled Poems Chiefly in the Scottish Dialect, and it was a success. It was praised by critics, and Burns dropped his plans for Jamaica, moved to Edinburgh, and became a beloved poet. And it's the birthday of Virginia Woolf, born in London, 1882, author of Mrs. Dalloway, To the Lighthouse, Orlando, The Waves. She also wrote a book called A Room of One's Own, in which she said a woman must have money and a room of her own if she is to write fiction. She herself wrote in her house in Bloomsbury in a downstairs storage room, which had been a billiard room, a room with a cold stone floor, a skylight packed with hundreds of books, a bed, an old wicker chair, where she wrote for 3 hours every morning, using a wooden board for a table, smoking hand-rolled cigarettes. On this day in 1915, she wrote in her diary that her husband gave her a green purse and a book and took her to the movies, and they had tea and decided to get a bulldog. Here's a poem for today by Ann Porter, Winter Twilight. On a clear winter's evening, the crescent moon and the round squirrel's nest in the bare oak are equal planets. Ann Porter's poem Winter Twilight from her collection Living Things, published by Zoland Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith, written by Betsy Alistair. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Time is 3:16 and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. January is National Mentoring Month, and here to talk about it is people from Big Brothers Big Sisters, Carlton Smith, who is a big brother, and also T.J. Thomas Kramer. He's a Big Brother Big Sister Match Sports Specialist. Here to talk about the Johnson Youth Center program. Carlton and Thomas, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
So T.J., you want to tell me about the Johnson Youth Center program, please?
Yeah, right now we... Well, as always, we have those three programs, the community and the, or the two programs, the community and school program. And right now we are, we make matches in the Johnson Youth Center, and we match up the residents there. They are in the treatment side. And so we make the matches there ideally for those residents there that will hopefully stay in Juneau and then become a community match later. And so I have a really good big brother here in Carlton. He's done a really good job with one of the residents there, and he's just very committed, and it really makes a difference for those kids in there. It gives them something to look forward to. Tons of those kids don't even have visitors coming in throughout the holidays or almost at all, so it's really nice to have somebody come in and, you know, give them something to look forward to.
But how many matches do you have?
Right now we have 5 in Johnson Youth Center.
Colin Smith, you're a big brother. How long have you been a big brother?
Started out with a program about 32 years ago. And at that time, the program in Juneau was new, relatively new. And at that time, I was matched with a young man. It was about a four-year match, and he and his mother left town. So I decided about a year and a half ago to jump back into the program. And the Johnson Youth Center program really appealed to me because it's it's a little different and requires a little different level of commitment.
So jazz?
I'm sorry?
What kind of commitment?
Well, it's a more structured program in that the visiting hours are limited, Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. So you basically have a one-hour choice 3 days a week to commit to spending the one-to-one time in the facility with the resident. And that appealed to me because it was manageable, but also the residents of the center there, they, as TJ suggested, a lot of them have no contact with the outside. So this appealed to me.
You're kind of a busy guy. How do you fit it all in? How much time does it take of you?
In this program?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, probably so far maybe 25 to 35 hours, and I've been in the program now about 5 or 6 months. And it's pretty easy to plug that in, plug that 1 hour into the routine minimum per week, and it's pretty gratifying.
What kind of activities do you do?
Well, when you're in the facility, which, of course, is a secure facility, you have an open meeting room, visitation room, where all of the residents who are receiving visitors have an open area where they interact. They can use a table or they can use couches. So we usually have just a good conversation about the week and about the week ahead and some long-term goals, and we can play cards. In this particular resident's case, he's interested in the Tlingit language, so we've been spending time on that with a special tutor that comes in, and that's been a great boon for him. He's pretty excited about it.
What kind of rewards do the participants get and also the Big Brothers get?
TJ, you want to take that?
Well, also the participants, well, the residents, they get passes. Also, they receive passes. So I remember a resident last year got to go skiing 6 times, and, I mean, that's more than some of the people that aren't, I mean, don't have things going on. So also it's just very rewarding to see. I mean, we went in last year and saw 2 people go there on Christmas where these residents wouldn't have had somebody come in on Christmas. And, I mean, that's rewarding on my part just to see somebody that I helped provide them with a good Christmas, somebody to see and hang out with. So it's really rewarding on all different angles. It helps the residents. It helps everybody. And also, if you don't have the time or the commitment or want to go into Johnson Youth Center, there's also the other programs. So please give us a call also for those programs. But Carlton's just done great, so I'm interested in hearing maybe what he's found rewarding so far as well.
Well, one of the things I look forward to when we talk about long-term goals with this particular resident, I see his eyes light up. He looks forward to playing basketball at a couple of different locations. It gets him out of the facility at least twice a week to engage in, you know, sportsman activity with other students. That's a big deal to get out of the facility in total for an hour or two just to play basketball. And he's already looking forward to that time when he will have 2 and 3 hour passes to either take in a movie or go to a pizza parlor, go to my house, maybe have lunch somewhere. This is a pretty big deal to these kids.
How about for you personally?
For me personally, I'm excited for this person that he's starting to plan long term. He's starting to think about his own future, starting to think about options for further education. And the element that's begin to be very apparent is self-confidence, and that's pretty exciting to observe. And again, as TJ suggested, there's other kids that need help. They need the one-to-one attention that really counts.
TJ, how does one get involved in the program?
Call us at 586-3350. So
kind of
call anytime. We can set up an interview, just start the process.
What kind of screening process is there?
I just come in, do an interview. We find out your preferences, see what kind of, which community you want to be involved in, or which part, the school or the community-based, or Johnson Youth Center. And then we just match you up with somebody who has the same preferences. You'll go through some background checks, but it's not too big of a deal. It's a simple process. Mm-hmm. It can take a while if you're a big brother, you know. If you're a big sister, we have tons of little brothers waiting. So if you're a big brother, you get matched up right away. We have, depending on the school, we might have, just depending on where you want to be matched up to. It can take some time, but the process is pretty simple. So,
Carl, what made you want to take the pledge 30-some-odd years ago and then most recently to get back into the system?
One of the most amazing telephone calls I received in my life was from that individual that I worked with 31 years ago. He called me up cold 15 years ago and said, "Do you remember me?" And I said, "Yes." And he just said, I want you to know the time we spent together made a difference in my life. And this was just an opportunity to invest in another relationship that hopefully will count down the road.
I've been talking with Carolyn Smith and Thomas Kramer about Big Brothers Big Sisters National Mentoring Month. If you'd like to get involved in the program, call them at 586-3350. Anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
Nope. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you for coming by. Time is 3:26, and you are tuned in to KTWO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Keith Wertheimer from the Eagles here to talk about a special auction they have going on Saturday, to benefit the disabled vets. Keith, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. The Fraternal Order of the Eagles, 4200, and the Disabled American Vets Juneau chapter number 4, will be holding a joint raffle and auction. This is open to the public, and you're encouraged to attend and help our men and women in uniform, past and present. That's all active duty, and all veterans are welcome from Air Force, Army, Navy, Marines. And it'll be held at the Fraternal Eagles Lodge, 4200, and that's 2055 Jordan Avenue. That's right across the street from the old Evergreen Ford. And it'll be held from 2 p.m. till 10, and there will be hot dogs and hamburgers served and beverages. And like I said, it's open to all the public on this day, and we would like for you to stop by and see us.
Tell us a little about the Eagles organization, if you could, please.
Well, the Eagles Lodge, the Fraternal Order of the Eagles, we're people helping people. We try to help out our neighbors and the members of our community, and we're also a private social club and a fraternal organization dating back to about 1900.
Tell me a little bit more of the sample items you might have for auction on Saturday.
Well, we've got some collectible prints by various artists. We have a bunch of we have a lot of jewelry by different artists, and a lot of memorabilia to the auction. Vic Perez has been instrumental in helping us. He's the service officer here for the DAV, and we're hoping to raise quite a bit of money.
Can you tell me a little bit about the DAV?
Disabled American Vets What they do is what Vic does and is help out the veterans with the Veterans Administration, also help with local financial needs as far as medical, as far as utilities, as far as food, and all the funds raised here locally stay in the community.
It's happening this Saturday starting at what time again? 2 o'clock?
2 p.m. and we'll be going on to, it'll be going on till about 10 p.m. or whenever everything is sold, whichever comes first.
Tell us where again, please.
Sure thing. It'll be held at the Fraternal Order of the Eagles Lodge. That's 2055 Jordan Avenue, Suite Number 1, and that's right next to Northern Hotspots, right across from the old Evergreen Ford Motor Company.
All right, I've been talking with Keith Wertheimer about the Eagles auction this Saturday. Keith, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, that about covers it. Hope you'll stop by and see us.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Jeff.
KTOO is sponsored by the Alaska Club, with 18 locations statewide, celebrating its 25th anniversary. The Alaska Club, the way fitness should be. TheAlaskaClub.com.
Diamond Park Aquatic Center will be closing at 4 o'clock today for safety reasons. They're having electrical problems that causes the lights to randomly turn on and off. Time is 3:32, and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on Juneau Afternoon. Next guests are Juneau Dietrichson and also Tina Brown from the Alaska Wildlife Alliance here to talk about Wildlife Wednesday. Tina, can you tell us about the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, if you could, please?
Hi, Jeff. It's good to be here. We are kicking off the winter series of Wildlife Wednesdays tonight with a great presentation by Juneau Dietrichson on Native art in Southeast Alaska. It's called Nature in Southeast Alaska Native Art, and it's 7 o'clock tonight at the UAS Glacier View Room. It's right above the lecture hall, room 221, and we're really looking forward to it.
And also in the studio is Juneau Dietrichson here to talk about Nature in Southeast Alaska Art, that presentation tonight. Yes, Juneau, first define art as you see it.
To me, art is a buildup of knowledge and the way the materials or the subject matter is handled, whether it's art, whether it's dance, or telling stories, or sculpture, or painting. For me, it's a buildup of experience that's passed down for generations, and it becomes to a point where you finally master the materials that you're handling, which gives you the freedom to move and be more creative.
What kind of art do you produce?
Normally, I work with in wood, whether it's bowls or masks, spoons. I've done a little bit of copper work. Mainly whatever that comes into my head. Sometimes it's these items are pretty quick, but other times it takes a lot of work to work out a design. So,
coming from my perspective, it seems like a lot of things in the native culture are just infused with art. Many things like bowls and spoons, they aren't just bowls and spoons, they have artistic aspects as well.
Yes, they do. Almost everything you see, especially in the museums or in pictures, they are decorated, but it seems to me like their function has come before, and then it's decorated on the outside, not as an afterthought, but as a complete whole. And yet there are even just simple objects that seem plain, but they have certain textures to them that takes a lot of practice to do, and then that in itself is kind of an art form.
How is nature reflected in Southeast Native art?
It's reflected in just about everything. The stories that are told, one of the most widely known is how ravens stole the sun, moon, and stars. And that story within it explains, you know, part of the natural world we see around us. In the totemic heraldry, where it describes, you know, the families who lives in this place, or just about anything you see is a reflection of the world that is around us in the place that we grew up.
How important is nature in your work?
It's quite very important. I grew up in Juneau and spent summers in Sitka and spent quite of my time outdoors as a kid and just general observations. And then now reflecting on that, it's one of my greatest sources of inspiration.
Are you an artist appreciator or a student? All of the above?
I'm more of a self-learned student. I grew up not having any formal teaching about the art, but spent a great deal of time watching others carve and draw and paint, listening to some older stories whenever I can, and just imitating what I saw. So mine is self-taught as far as that's concerned, but I consider myself more of a continual student. I always love to keep learning, whether it's just about art or nature or science or whatever I may be interested at the time.
Talking with Juno Didrikson about the Wildlife Wednesday presentation, which is going on tonight. We'll have some more details about that. But tonight's presentation, how is it going to be formatted?
It's in a PowerPoint presentation, most of it's pictures, but I will be talking all the way through the pictures and explaining what is shown there. As far as I understand, it's supposed to last 45 minutes, so there should be some quite interesting details, either that people already know about or are new to.
How much research did you do for the project?
Since I was 9, I was given my first knife. So ever since then, I've been whittling. My hands are always busy, either trying to carve or trying to draw or copying old designs to keep my hand in practice with the older forms of Tlingit art in particular I'm interested in right now.
Do you want to go over the details of tonight's presentation, if you could, please?
I'd be happy to, and just listening now, I didn't think I could be any more excited, but I am really looking forward to it. The presentation is with Juno Didrikson, and it's Nature in Southeast Alaska, Native Art, Tonight, 7 o'clock, UAS Glacier View Room. If you need more information, you're welcome to call me at 523-5402. But if you just go to Egan near the library, you'll probably spot the Glacier View Room. Come on down. We'll have Heritage Coffee, generously donated by Heritage, also homemade sweets. And after Juno's talk, there'll be time for questions and socializing. It's a beautiful night to go out and enjoy some talks about Native art.
And this is a regular presentation that happens on the second or third Wednesday of the month?
Approximately. We really design it to suit our speakers. On February 22nd, for example, Lori Craig is going to present Bears Eating Trees. So you'll be seeing flyers for that. And on March 14th, Jay Beadle, Jaylene Beadle, and Mark Kelly are going to be sharing their wildlife photography and signing and selling their most recent book.
All right, Tina Brown and Juno Didrikson, thank you very much for coming down. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
I think you've covered it all. Just everybody come early to get a good seat. This is going to be wonderful.
Yeah, I don't have anything on the top of my head that I can think of to add at the moment. But if you come down, you can ask any questions, and I'll do my best to answer.
And thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
time is 3:44, and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Kevin Tripp. He's calling from the MEPA headquarters in Anchorage, here to talk about a presentation called Politics of the Past, going on this next Monday night at the Goldtown Nickelodeon Theater. Kevin, thank you very much for being on the show with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So first of all, tell me about AMEPA, if you could, please.
Sure. AMEPA, the Alaska Moving Image Preservation Association, is a private nonprofit, 501c3 organization that was founded just over 20 years ago last summer, to preserve and make accessible motion picture films, video recordings, and audio recordings with Alaskan content.
How many items in your collection?
Not everything has been inventoried, and we have a couple large collections that are actually bearing down on us even as I speak. But certainly at this point, we're upwards of 20,000 individual units of film, video, or audio, and probably over 200 individual collections that of varying sizes that make up those individual items are a part of.
Can I mention the variety of media must be overwhelming? Do you have things like Super 8 and videotape?
Oh, yeah. We have a wide variety of formats. And that's one of the challenges of running a media archive is being able to manage and make accessible all the legacy formats. We basically have to maintain a working museum of broadcast technology. And we can manage several different film formats and most of the major analog video formats that have been used in production. And are working on trying to keep up with all the digital formats that are coming our way.
How do you get your media? Is it all donated?
Generally, when the organization was first started, it was actually started by people who came out of the broadcast community and saw a real need for legacy broadcast collections that didn't really have an institutional home. And so some of the original collections that came there, that AMEPA was built around were large, professionally produced broadcast collections, some of which were produced by media services at UAA during the 70s and 80s. That's a very, it's a large part of what's here, as well as other commercial and nonprofit broadcasters from around the state, including, some content from KTOO.
What kind of process do you use to catalog and then just keep track of all the items you have?
Currently, we have a database that's been constructed using descriptive standards for legacy media collections. A database that's been built inside in FileMaker, and we use that and as well as a variety of other kind of basic desktop tools like Excel for doing initial inventories of collections, but more detailed description is done in standardized catalog records. And, that's the basic descriptive tools we use now.
How do you decide what to save and what to not save?
Well, it depends. A lot of what's here is legacy content that was accumulated in years before I was here, certainly. And some of that, at this point, because it's so time-consuming to go through media content, and some of it we know more about than others, there's probably some things here that, like in a lot of archives, could probably be weeded out. It's just a matter of finding the time to do it. And as long as we have the space, we try to err on the side of, holding on to something that maybe we don't need, as opposed to losing something that might have been important. Really interesting historic content has cropped up in really unlikely places. So, sort of the first pass we give it is, what's the age of it? Like if somebody contacts us with film that was shot in Alaska before World War II, almost without knowing anything else, I'll say we're interested in it just because there just simply isn't that much that was generated before then. After the war, when the population starts to grow more dramatically, you start to see a lot more media being produced of different kinds. But even then, certainly well into the 50s and 60s, we're more likely to be interested than not. But certainly as we get into, video formats and, where it becomes less expensive to produce, a lot more content gets produced. And so at that point, we have to be a little bit more selective and think about what it is that we're bringing in and what potential research interest it may serve in the future.
How big is your staff?
There's the two of us. Myself and the archivist, I come at it from sort of the traditional sort of information and history side of it. And then I have a coworker, Greg Schmitz, who is really our primary technical person at this point. And he knows a great deal about traditional photo optical processes and also has a lot of hands-on experience with, legacy analog equipment. We're very fortunate to have him here. He's one of those great sort of autodidacts who can pretty much teach himself anything when he needs to.
What happens? Is your organization open to the public? So if somebody just wanted a copy of Governor Hickel's inaugural address, you can just look it up in your database and pull it out a copy and loan it to him?
Well, in essence, we don't have a catalog online at this point. That's something would be a high priority for us, but we don't have a database that's accessible that way right now. So right now, it's still sort of more of a traditional research process where somebody contacts us, and that's pretty much one of my roles is to do what they call in the traditional archives world sort of a research interview and to determine what somebody's looking for and what might be of interest to them and help them kind of narrow their research interest, and then I can kind of point them to the right content and then find a way, depending on the format it's in and the condition it's in and a lot of different variables like that, find a way to make it accessible for them so they can review it and determine whether or not it's going to work for their project, or if it's just the general public and they just want to look at something out of their own personal interest, we're certainly open for that as well. We're a public institution and we have a little reference set up here just down the hall from us, with a DVD player and a VHS player, so that a person can, member of the general public or somebody doing research for a documentary can sit down and spend as many hours as they want reviewing content that we can provide for them.
Do you have any favorite items in the collection, something that you just looked at and said, wow, this is so neat and cool?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a current example that's been shown several times here in Anchorage in the last couple of months that we've had for a while, but I just, one of those things, there's just, more stuff to look at than our hours in the day and too many other things to do. But, we just passed the 40th anniversary of ANCSA, the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, and we were invited to provide content for a couple of different collections or a couple of different special events that were going on around that anniversary, and we also included some of the footage in the Politics of the Past program. So some of this footage will be shown at the event in Juneau next Monday. And what it is the most historic part of it, it's pretty rough visually, but because unfortunately it's a multi-generation copy, and we don't know where the master is at this stage. We'd love to find it, but it's half-inch open reel video originally that was shot over here at APU, just down the road from where we're located at UAA. It was shot there in December 1971 when the Alaska Federation of Natives voted to support the language of the act, and there's a part of a speech by Willie Hensley and part of a speech by Emil Nadi, and then there's this and I'd heard about this, but I hadn't watched it myself until just the last couple of months, and as rough as it is, it definitely is what it is. And what they did was the president actually called in the president of the United States at the time, Richard Nixon, to talk to the AFN body and tell them that he was signing the legislation, and they actually just took a little speaker and stuck it next to the microphone so that everybody in the room could hear the president speak. And I didn't expect the fidelity of it to be very good, but it's as rough as it is, it's unquestionably the voice of Richard Nixon. And the camera kind of pans around. You can see the face of everybody in the room, at this really pivotal moment, and certainly in Alaskan history. And it just brings it to life in a way that, nothing else can. And at the screening we did here in Anchorage last October, we were fortunate enough to have Willie Hensley in the audience, and he'd never seen the video himself. And he certainly had a great time viewing it, as did everybody else who was present.
I'm talking with Kevin Tripp from the Alaska Moving Image Preservation Association. They have an Anchorage, but they have a show Monday night at the Gold Center Colony Theater at 6:30, and also at 8 p.m. it's a free show. Kevin, you want to tell me more about the program, if you could, please?
Sure. It's the concept is one that AMIPA has visited and revisited off and on over the years, called Politics of the Past, and the whole idea was to just kind of feature legacy, you know, vintage Alaskan political spots, a lot of which, particularly when Alaska was a little bit more isolated from the outside world than it is now, the spots had a little bit more of a, you know, kind of a local idiosyncratic quality than maybe they do today. And a lot of them are very funny, and some of them are, you know, just interesting from a historical perspective, and they're just they always make for a fascinating program. And we hadn't done it in several years. The last time AMIPA had done this program was almost 10 years ago, right about the time I first started working for AMIPA, and they did it down in the 4th Avenue Theater here in Anchorage. And I know the people who put on the program at the time, they also took it to Juneau. I wasn't present for that trip, but I know they took it to Juneau, and that has always been historically, again, part of what they'd always done with the politics of the past program was to try to, try to get it outside of Anchorage, since we do have a statewide mission, our organization does, and for obvious reasons, it's just a great program to get to Juneau in particular. So we had an opportunity to get it into the schedule at the Gold Town Nickelodeon on Monday, and it seemed like good timing. You know, the legislative session is open, but it's, you know, early enough on that hopefully people aren't going to be too busy to make it in. I think obviously a lot of people from that community would enjoy the program, I think. We're very grateful to have the Gold Town Nickelodeon as a venue. We worked with them last year in putting on a screening of a Ray Mala film called Eskimo back last year, when there was a lot of energy around Ray Mala's career, who, for those of you who may not have caught that, Ray Mala was a Nupiaq movie star from Candle, Alaska, who made quite a number of features in the 30s and 40s. And this is probably his most well-known feature, and we showed that there in conjunction with sort of a statewide film festival that was going on in conjunction with a book that Lael Morgan had written about the life of Ray Mala. So we worked with the Gold Town Nickelodeon last year to bring Eskimo to the Juneau community. Had a great turnout for that, and I know people really enjoy seeing that film because there's no home video release of it. And a great, great movie filmed on location. So we worked with them last year, and they enjoyed it, and we enjoyed it, and it's a great little venue downtown. And so we're grateful to be able to bring our politics of the past program to their screen.
It's happening Monday night at 6:30 and at 8 o'clock, and it's free. Kevin Tripp, thank you very much for coming on the show with us today.
Thank you very much. Hope to see you there.
KTUO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. The Valley and Ock Bay area tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. And Lebanon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Sursuna at 91.9. Excursion inlet in IC Strait, you can hear KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. So live online at www.ktuo.org. Tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk to Ann Seacrest about the new season of AARP programs on 360 North TV. Find out about the Perseverance Theater's production of Animals Out of Paper opening Friday night. Dr. Alan McCain will be here to talk about kitchen medicine. Nancy Trini will give us news and views about art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. The Writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Coming up next is All Things Considered. We've been having some technical problems getting our signals and fax stations all over the country. We've been having trouble with NPR signal due to technical problems with NPR. We'll get to All Things Considered as soon as we can. Thank you for listening to it June afternoon, and have a great evening.